The next case for argument is MS International v. United States, appeal number 21-1679 and 1680. Mr. Craven, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am here today to discuss this case, and specifically, we believe that this is a case where procedure is, in fact, important, and critically, we think that what the petitioner said at the start of the case, before the case was initiated, is very important. The petitioner said in the pre-petition phase that the scope was not intended to cover products in which the crushed glass content of the product is greater than any other single material by actual weight. And therefore, they revised the scope before the case was initiated to expressly exclude crushed glass. This was not a question which arose during the course of the investigation. It was a question which was specifically raised during the pre-initiation phase of the investigation. The scope, including the crushed glass exclusion, continued through the preliminary determinations and subsequent to the preliminary determinations in what was something that was somewhat extraordinary under department practices. The petitioner requested that the scope be clarified to include crushed glass back into the scope of the case. And we believe that petitioner's words at the start of the case should have been controlling, and more importantly, that any scope modification requests should have occurred in the pre-preliminary phase of the case. Now, there are a number of secondary procedural issues that I really don't think I should go into today. Specifically, we think the issue on the hearing is very straightforward. We think we should have been granted a hearing, but I don't want to spend the time of the court focusing on what I frankly is.
Mr. Craven, can you just... Mr. Craven, this is Judge Hughes.
Secondary issue.
Sorry, Mr. Craven, I think we're having a little bit of difficulty, but this is Judge Hughes. Do you think that Commerce did not have the legal authority to redetermine the scope here in the way it did?
Well, I think the Commerce always has the authority to set the scope. The difficulty is that the procedures and the Commerce's practice is to set the scope in the preliminary before the preliminary.
I know. That's the question I'm asking you, though, is Commerce did not – do you think they did not, when during the course of – of these proceedings, they discovered that there was a potential for evasion of the duties. Do you think they don't have the legal authority to refine what the scope is?
I think they have the legal authority to refine the scope, but I don't believe they have the legal authority to expand the scope beyond what was covered in the petition, particularly critically because at the petition phase, when the petition comes in, the evaluation is made as to who constitutes the U.S. domestic industry. As the United States and as Cambria have frequently pointed out, the decision as to whether there is standing to bring the case is made in the initial phases of the investigation, and the United States has consistently held it is not something that the courts or that the Commerce Department can reexamine. So when we set a scope that excludes glass product, and excludes, therefore, a number of producers of product from the domestic industry, the domestic industry's determination as to the domestic industry is made based on a scope that does not include crushed glass.
And Mr. Craven, can I just ask you, I'm having a hard time. I understand what you're saying factually, but I'm having a hard time understanding what's the difference between refining and broadening. You said that they can refine, but they can't broaden. Does that mean you think they can only narrow? What exactly are you saying?
Yes, Your Honor, I think if you look at the historic precedent of what Commerce has done, and there are multiple cases where the Department of Commerce has altered the scope even after the preliminary, but in those cases, for example, in olives or in sodium hex, they have reduced or limited the scope. They haven't expanded the scope because expanding the scope potentially impacts who is a member of the domestic industry. And that's very important for deciding standing, and that's very important for deciding ultimately injury. Because
so is it your view that this is the first case in which commerce has expanded the scope?
This is my view that this is the first case where commerce has expanded the scope in this fashion, Ms. Stroner.
In this fashion? What do you mean by in this fashion?
Based on a request by petitioner, which was untimely.
Are there other circumstances where commerce has expanded the scope for other?
I am not aware of any. There may well be some unusual circumstances, but I don't believe that there are, and I also don't believe that this is an unusual circumstance. This is a relatively straightforward case. And critically, we also can talk about the delay in bringing this to the attention of the Commerce Department.
So one other question. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Judge Saul.
I was just going to ask, I mean, what authority do you have for the idea that Commerce can't expand the scope other than that it hasn't been done before?
Just a second, Your Honor. I have my notes here, and I apologize. Well, I go back to its court precedent and administrative precedent. In Smith Corona, this court, the CAFC, that in determining the status of products that have been modified since the issuance of the order, the initial inquiry is whether the products were specifically included within the order.
So, Mr. Craven, is that a scope determination that's coming after the final determination?
Yes, that is.
Well, those cases don't seem particularly relevant to me here. We're not talking about Commerce trying to modify a final order. We're talking about what Commerce can do from the preliminary order to the final, and what authority is there that Commerce can't refine its order to say our original scope didn't capture what we intended to, and so we're going to change it because we've gotten evidence that the original articulation is going to allow evasion of the purpose. Isn't that precisely what Commerce has done here and precisely something within their authority?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think we go back to, for example, in sodium hex, in determining whether or not to examine, increase the scope, the department said, during our review of the petition, we discussed the scope with petitioners to ensure that it accurately reflects the product for which the domestic industry was seeking relief. And here we had multiple discussions with the domestic industry deciding on what they wanted to seek relief on. And also, it was raised very late in the process, essentially depriving...
Okay, Mr. Craven, I don't want you to focus on what the petitioners did or how they raised it or the like. I want you to focus on whether Commerce could ultimately do what it did here and what prevents Commerce from sua sponte raising this question, setting aside what was the impetus for their decision to clarify the scope.
Okay. Commerce has a lot of power in setting scope, and I will acknowledge that readily to the court. That being said, Commerce's decisions must track their historic practices. And this is not something that they have done. They have consistently held that they do not expand the scope after the preliminary determination.
Okay. You keep talking about expanding the scope, and I suppose that's one way of looking at it, but I think the other way of looking at it, which is what I suspect Commerce is going to tell me, is that this original exclusion for glass products was meant to exclude a very specific type of glass product. We all know what we're talking about. I won't try to describe it because I'll get it wrong, but it's in the record. And that during the course of the investigation, Commerce got evidence that suggested that a different kind of glass product that wasn't meant to be covered by this exclusion was going to come in and was going to evade the order. So why isn't that exactly the type of clarification that they're allowed to do? And that's not really an expansion of the scope because it's not the type of product that was supposed to be covered by the carve-out.
Well, except that the evidence shows that a number of products produced by the very companies named by petitioner that they were seeking to exclude were in fact going to now be covered by the scope of the order, and these were extant products. And we've discussed some of these in our case brief. So it would change if this decision had been made prior to the initiation. Had they changed it during the petition phase, it would have covered different range of domestic industry. And that's one of the critical parts of this, is that this scope covered this expansion of the scope would have brought in specific additional companies into the domestic industry, and those companies weren't considered as part of the domestic industry during the evaluation of standing and other relevant factors. And so that's the key. And the other point I would make...
Can you tell me, I understand that point, but what difference would that point have made to this investigation in the ultimate final order?
Well, because it would have changed who the injury determination was examining, who the domestic industry was, whether they had standing. These are all important points, because if a party does not have standing to bring the case shouldn't be brought.
I'm still confused. You're saying it might have changed standing, but we would have still had the original people here that presumably have standing. You're just saying that this could have brought in more people?
This would have expanded the number of companies involved in the domestic industry and therefore changed the nature of the domestic industry.
But how would that affect the standing question? We'd still have the original domestic industry companies that would have that standing.
Well, then it comes down to a question, though, for evaluation of the percentage of the industry that supported it. There were members of the domestic industry that did not support this case, or at least did not take a stand publicly on this case. And secondly, it would have affected the ITC.
Did that include some of these companies that you thought would have been covered if this different product had been excluded or included?
Right. They didn't have the opportunity to comment on that because, again, this is not an issue which is examined after the petition is filed.
You're well into your rebuttal time, Mr. Craven. Would you like to save it?
I'm sorry. Yes, Your Honor. I apologize. I thought the time was giving me my primary argument. Yes, I would like to reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Yeah, it starts from the whole 15. Mr. Curlin?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The manner in which Commerce proceeded in this case is consistent with the well-established procedures of anti-dumping and countervailing duty and trade remedy investigations. And one particularly salient articulation of that is this Court's decision in Duferco at pages 1089 and 1096-97, just very widely quoted, that the purpose of a petition is to propose an investigation, and the purpose of Commerce's investigation itself is to determine what merchandise should be included in the final order.
Mr. Carlin, before you get to the main part of your argument, I'm just curious because it's a different point, but since it's fresh, can you just respond to that last point Mr. Craven made about, you know, if the new scope had been from the outset, that it might have changed the entire course of the investigation because there might have been other domestic industry participants and the like. I mean, I'm not sure what to make of all of that argument. So what's Commerce's view on that?
Sure. And I'll note, Your Honor, that this is something we addressed in our brief. But I think there are a couple issues there. The first is I want to be clear that despite the assertions that Mr. Craven makes, there's been no factual determination that companies he identified would have been part of the domestic industry or major players or that they weren't importing the goods that they were selling. So I don't think the Court should accept at face value some determination that companies are in. But what we pointed out in our brief is that Mr. Craven this is on reply. He argues that that we've kind of stood this issue on its head because Commerce can't reevaluate the domestic industry standing during the proceeding. It's actually he who is standing this issue on its head, because the whole point of that rule that doesn't allow Commerce to reevaluate the issue was to address the situation that was going on a long time ago in like the 80s and early 90s, where every time Commerce tweaked the language of a particular investigation, to be more expansive or narrower, that people would want Commerce to reassess the industry standing issue in that case. And so Congress made a specific determination, or at least that's what the law represents, to say, no, we're not going to keep reevaluating this every time there's a change to the industry. It's also an issue that this court addressed in the context of the Mitsubishi decision, which I think we'll end up talking about more on the main point. But at page 1584 to 1585, there was also an issue about inconsistency with the ITC determination and whether that was a reason not to allow Commerce to have expanded the scope of the order in that case. And this court held that it wasn't because the evasion issue there was more significant. And even though the ITC had looked at one set of sub-assemblies and there was an argument that the additional sub-assemblies that Commerce had expanded the order to include were not what the ITC looked at, the court said that's not a reason not to allow Commerce to make sure there's no evasion here. So I hope that addresses that issue, Your Honor, and it's something we also addressed in our brief. The main legal point is that, and now I'm quoting the CIT's decision in Kyocera, but again, it's just a particularly good articulation of what the jurisprudence as a whole said, is that this is a 1316 of Kyocera. Commerce has authority to modify the scope language until the final determination based on information gathered during the investigation. And I think it's fair to say that that's especially so when the information gathered during the investigation reveals the potential for evasion. And I don't think I need to go into the weeds on this, but here in this case, it's unusual in the sense that there was particularly strong evidence of evasion. What the trial court referred to as, quote, open and blatant evasion by the Chinese producers, who were always at issue in the investigation, manipulating their formula to exploit this crushed glass exclusion that was in the original petition language. We respectfully disagree with appellant's claim that there are no instances in the past where Commerce has expanded the scope during the investigation. In fact, those are the main cases we cite, in particular, both the trial court and this court's decision in Mitsubishi, as well as the trial courts and this court's decision, trial court in Kyocera, this court in Canadian Solar, which were the yin and yang of two separate solar investigations, one on the Taiwan side and one on the China side. I think the fact that Commerce was expanding the scope in Mitsubishi is particularly evident at page 543 of the trial court's opinion in that case. What the trial court explained is that the original scope in that case referenced the notion of sub-assemblies, but it said basically this is to cover cellular phones as well as components and kits of sub-assemblies. And so the idea was that the scope wasn't originally drafted to cover individual sub-assemblies, but only these grouping of sub-assemblies. And Commerce made the determination during the investigation that that wasn't good enough. We had to cover individual sub-assemblies, otherwise there'd be potential evasion. And the Court of International Trade upheld that determination. This court affirmed. With language that, given our time constraints, I don't need to get into, but it specifically discussed preventing evasion, specifically discussed Commerce's authority to modify the scope based on the information obtained during the investigation to effectuate the intent of what's going on. That's Commerce's whole role in these proceedings, to make sure that they are providing an effective remedy under the anti-dumping and countervailing duty orders. In Canadian Solar, same issue, and Kyocera. Canadian Solar was the China investigation. Kyocera was the Taiwan investigation. And the idea was that Commerce had to change the scope language to deal with country of origin issues. And as a result of that, entire companies were in or out of those particular investigations based on where their goods were made. And so that was both a complaint in Canadian Solar and particularly in Kyocera. The complaint was, hey, our company wasn't in this investigation effectively until you modified the scope all the way in the final determination. And the courts consistently said that, that is not going to dissuade us here. There's an evasion concern, and Commerce properly dealt with that evasion concern by creating a scope that gets at the issue. I was remiss in not also mentioning the trial court decision in Kyocera. We quoted this in our brief. I'm sorry, Mitsubishi. We quoted this in our brief, talked about the factors that Commerce can take into account. And some of it, one of it was kind of the newness of the, well, there we talk about the newness of the industry, but I think that applies to the newness of the way the Chinese producers here were modifying their materials to take advantage of the exclusion, also the known practices of the export, the foreign exporters, also relevant here. Briefly, the main case that Breskin cites is a case called Minabea. It's not relevant. Minabea, like the cases that Your Honor discussed in plaintiff's case in chief, is a case, it's a regular owed scope determination. Sometimes Commerce does those during the investigation itself. So it was during the investigation, but it was a regular old scope determination where Commerce was simply deciding whether the product fell within the scope that had already been articulated. It wasn't deciding whether or not to change the scope in any way. And so it applied these diversified product factors, which are now codified. They're known as the K2 factors. Comes up a lot in the court's decisions, K1 and K2. But those factors have nothing to do with whether Commerce modify the scope to address evasion concerns. I think one other point I can make on industry support is this court in the Kyocera decision at 1315, I'm sorry, the CIT in that decision indicated that the exclusion of additional sales was not a reason to undermine Commerce's determination to modify the scope in the final determination. And of course here, really the exclusion is just cutting out a small piece of what was otherwise well included. I mean, the whole point of this is that the scope said we are including products of silica, not quartz, but silica. And so this was supposed to be a narrow carve-out from the broad inclusion of the industry here for these recycled products. I don't think it's fair to say that the ITC in this case had failed to look at the overall industry that was at issue. If Your Honors don't have further questions, we are happy to rest. We respectfully request that the court affirm the decision of the trial court.
Thank you, Mr. Kerlin. Mr. Meisner?
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court. Commerce's modification of the scope to address open and blatant evasion was supported by the record evidence, was an appropriate use of the agency's discretion, and was in accordance with due process. It should therefore be upheld. When we first filed the petitions on quartz surface parts from China in April 2018, we were not aware of the existence of any type of crushed glass surface. That is why the original petition made no mention of crushed glass. Commerce later called and asked whether we intended to include any glass products in the scope. That is when we became aware of this niche product, often made by hand using recycled wine and beer bottles, that has a unique look where large pieces of glass are visible across the surface. You can see photos of this product at Appendix 576, 580, 594, and 595. We believe this product was sufficiently different from Cambria's product and served such a small niche market that it could be excluded from the scope, so long as crushed glass was the predominant raw material used to make it. Commerce initiated the investigations based on this original scope exclusion, and when doing so, set deadlines for the submission of factual information and comments on the scope. Commerce emphasized, however, that outside of these regular deadlines, if a party subsequently finds that additional factual information pertaining to the scope of the investigation may be relevant, the party may contact Commerce and request permission to submit the additional information. That's at Appendix 203. In late November 2018, after the preliminary determinations were issued, we began to receive alarming evidence that Chinese producers were exploiting the original crushed glass exclusion to ship what they called a newly developed product that used fine glass powder instead of quartz powder to make surfaces that were indistinguishable from other quartz surface products, including those made by Cambria. There were no visible pieces of glass whatsoever on these new products. Example of it can be seen at Appendix 602, 603, 606, and 611. As soon as it was feasible, after the government shutdown had ended, we sought Commerce's permission to submit evidence of this evasion onto the record. Commerce accepted the evidence, allowed the respondents to submit rebuttal evidence, and then held a separate round of briefing on whether it should modify the scope. Commerce also held ex parte meetings with the parties on this issue. We thus see the central question before this court to be whether Commerce abused its discretion when it modified the scope to address what the lower court described as open and blatant evasion. The answer is no. As this court has recognized in the case of Mitsubishi, Commerce has the authority to modify a scope to address evasion based on information developed during the course of an investigation. Accordingly, we respectfully request that this court uphold Commerce's decision to modify the scope.
Thank you, Mr. Meisner. Mr. Craven, you have some time left for rebuttal.
Apologies, I had to unmute. Thank you. I think the key here is you need to look at the language of Mitsubishi. On our rebuttal brief on page 4 of our rebuttal brief, we note that while Commerce has in broad discretion, this is from Mitsubishi, from the court decision, they have the discretion to define and clarify the scope in a manner which reflects the intent of the petition, and that when a question arises, the first thing the ITA must do is, quote, determine whether the petition covers the product. If the petition is ambiguous, Commerce then examines additional documentary evidence. This scope was not ambiguous. The scope was very clear. It said it did not cover crushed glass. And we also go back to there's strong evidence of evasion. We don't believe that that evidence is strong, but more critically, the notification to the Commerce Department was late. While it is true that there was a government shutdown, Mr. Meisner's firm was not shut down, and they delayed significantly after the government returned before they put this information in before the Commerce Department, limiting the time and ability of the respondents to provide additional information. And so we would note that this, it's part of the problem is this very late process significantly limited our ability to discuss this. We did, however, provide evidence showing that it would have covered product, and I would refer the court to appendix page 793, for example, which contains pictures of different kinds of crushed glass product, which does not look like the crushed glass which was sold prior to the initiation of the case, and which does not resemble the special niche crushed glass product that they're seeking to exclude. Simply put, we did not have a full opportunity, and that's why we talk about the procedure, to address this because it was raised late. And this is also why the Commerce Department wants the scope issues raised earlier, because it provides the opportunity for the parties to address these issues with sufficient time and consideration. And so we submit that the court precedent, Mitsubishi and the like, is clear, and that in this case, this expansion of scope was too late, and it while Commerce has the authority to do so, it must act in a reasonable and fair fashion, and that's not what we had here. And thank you, and I urge the court to remand this matter to the Commerce Department via the trial court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Craven, Mr. Kerlin, Mr. Meisner. The case is submitted. That concludes our arguments for today.
Thank you.
The Honorable Court is adjourned from day to day.